Thank you. So I'm very happy to welcome you to this session. The title is Understanding the MVVM Pattern. My name, like I was introduced, is Laurent Bunion. I'm Senior User Experience Integrator for a small firm located in Seattle, Washington, in the US, called Identity Mine. Personally, I'm based in Zurich, in Switzerland. And if you want to know more about me and what I do, you can go to my blog, galasov.ch. So let's start right ahead by understanding what does MVVM mean. Okay, there is a lot of confusion around that. And it's actually a pretty popular topic of discussion nowadays, I think, like the pretty much full room shows. So MVVM is really a very weird acronym. Okay, it doesn't help when you talk about it. It's called Model View View Model. We'll understand exactly what each of those components is doing. And you can be very popular by using phrases like, I'm going to do MVVM in SLOOB with SLUT, which means I'm going to do MVVM in a Silverlight out-of-the-browser application with the Silverlight unit test framework. So you are guaranteed to be very popular at parties with that. More seriously, though, MVVM is really a pattern which is built into WPF and Silverlight. So even if you never touch MVVM, you actually use MVVM without even knowing it. The smallest example of an MVVM component, if you like, are the controls in WPF and in Silverlight. You have code, you have dependency properties, and then you have a completely independent template which is data bound to those properties. Okay? That's a small view model and a small view. So it's really part of the platform. Now, there is also a lot of confusion about MVVM. MVVM is really just a pattern. We are going to understand what it does, and that's all. Okay? Unfortunately, under the name MVVM, you see also a lot of toolkits, frameworks, and I have a toolkit too, so I'm guilty of that too, which are basically just helpers, good practices that help you to build Silverlight and WPF application. Okay? But it's not MVVM. MVVM is just a very simple pattern. Okay? So we are going to talk about that in the next moment. Now let's talk a bit about separation patterns in the UI world. So the best known is Model View Controller. Okay, this one is very well known. You saw that yesterday in Scott Henselman's talk about ASP.NET MVC. That's a very old pattern. It was here since the 80s, probably, with Smalltalk. Okay, that's the interaction. Okay, let's move on. Now, something which is more interesting in terms of WPF and Silverlight is another pattern called the passive view pattern. This was developed by Martin Fowler, who did a lot of, still does actually, a lot of research around patterns. And the interesting thing in the passive view pattern is that the view is completely passive. It doesn't do anything. It just sits there. Okay? So since it's passive, you don't need to test it. Okay, of course you have to have a UI guy who does a test to just check that everything is good. But what I mean with that is that you don't include your view in your unit tests. Okay? And this is great because unit testing a view is super hard. Even with automation tools, you never have 100% coverage. You never even have 90% coverage. Okay? So you need to involve a human operator to test your view. Now, there is a variation of the passive view pattern which replaces the controller with something called a presentation model or a view model. And here we go. We have MVVM. Now, notice the interaction with the view. The view is a little bit more active than before. It's actually sending notifications to the presentation model. But we said just before that we didn't want to have an active view because we don't want to have to test the view. Okay? Now, in Silverlight and WPF, there is something which is great, which is called data binding. And data binding are given to you by Microsoft. They have been tested by Microsoft. You don't need to unit test the data binding. So you can have a slightly more active view than in the passive view pattern, which is nice because it's easier to program. On the other hand, you don't need to test it. Okay? This has been taken care of by somebody else with much more money than we do. Okay? So, data binding are very powerful. They are everywhere in Silverlight and WPF, and we should really use them, okay? The data binding framework is optimized, it's really cool. So let's just say a few words about blendability. Okay, now we often hear that MVVM pattern is good for testability. The reason is that you can test your view model. You can unit test it, automate it. Okay, the view, we just said, most of the time we don't really need to unit test it. It's okay. So that's a good thing because you have a big part of your client application which is testable. So one good point for MVVM. Now the other thing is the maintainability. Since you have each component cleanly separated, you can replace one of those components by something else. For example, you can replace a model if it's connecting to a old school remoting service like the ASMX web services. You can replace that with WCF, no problem. You don't need to touch your view model or barely, and you certainly don't need to touch the view. Okay? So that's maintainability. Now the other point is blendability. I touched that in my talk yesterday already, but let's go a little bit deeper into that. Blendability means the ability, it's a new word, I made that up, or somebody did at least, ability to be edited into Blend, okay? And of course the Visual Studio Designer, because the architecture is very similar. So usually when something works in Blend, when you can see data in Blend, you can see them in the Visual Studio Designer as well. Now to do that, you need two things. First thing is you need to be able to tell Blend to ignore some part of the code. So we say we are differentiating the code in design time. The reason is that Blend is actually loading your application's code and running it. Okay, it's not just a design tool. It's much more than that. It's actually a development environment. So since it is running the code, sometimes it encounters places that it cannot execute. Okay? For example, you cannot connect to a WCF service from Blend, or you cannot connect to a database from Blend. So by using different code at design time, we are able to simulate a behavior in Blend and basically to feed Blend anything we want. The other thing which is very useful, is the ability to create design time data. The reason is that when the designers are working, often they will see an empty screen. Typically, when you have a list control, and God knows that in WPF and Silverlight we do a lot of list controls, when you see a list controls and it's empty, it's very difficult to design. Okay? Even the best designer cannot design a widescreen. It's very hard. So to avoid that, what we do is that we create design time data and we feed that to Blend. At runtime, we connect to the real service. At design time, we create data. It's very nice also for another scenario, which is very often the case, when you actually develop an application and the services are not ready yet. Okay, that happens very often. We already work on the client app, but the services are not done. So what you can do is just have your team work off dummy data. You have to, of course, specify an interface, with the service guys. If you have a nice, clean interface, you can build your whole application and then connect later to the services. It's usually relatively painless. So let's see a demo. So what I'm going to show you now, this is a very simple application. I just created a standard Silverlight application. Everything I'm showing you works actually pretty much the same in WPF, and surprise, surprise, it works pretty much the same in the Windows Phone as well. So we will see an example of that in the end. So what I did here is simply add a service reference to a WCF service. This service is on my website in the US, and it's delivering the content of an XML file. Now, I also added a high-level model class, which is called Data Service. What it's doing, it's basically just an abstraction of my WCF service. So I have one method called getCustomers, which is going to return me a list of customers. Now, everything in Silverlight when you connect to WCF is asynchronous. Okay, and it's actually a good practice. Even in WPF, you should probably do asynchronous calls to web services because you don't want to block your application. So what we do to do that asynchronously, we pass a callback to the method. And this callback is going to be called when the web service returns the result. This callback is expressed as an action, so it's a pointer to a method, if you want. And it has two parameters. The first one is an IEnumerable, so it's a list of customer. And the second one is an exception. Now, the exception most of the time is null, but sometimes if something wrong happens, then you just set the exception. You just pass the exception to the client. Like this, you can display a nice error message. This customer class is particular. It has been generated for me by Visual Studio when I connect it to the WCF service. So it's a generated class. So now what I'm going to do is build a non-MVVM application so that we see what is the difference. Okay? First thing I will do is go into my code behind, into my view, and I'm going to add a dependency property. This dependency property is an observable collection of customers. You guys in the back can see, or should I bump the size? Nobody shouts? Okay, thanks. All right, so that's a list of customers. It just sits there for the moment. It does nothing. Now, inside the constructor of the page, this is not very, you know, best practice, but as soon as my view is constructed, I'm going to send a request to the service. So I'm constructing my data service, which is a class that we just saw. I'm calling getCustomers. And remember, I have to pass a callback to this method. And personally, I love lambda expressions. Last year, I didn't dare to show lambda expressions in talks like that. This year, I decided to just go ahead with it. So bear with me. I'm going to explain, OK? Lambda expression is a way to express an anonymous method. You have the signature. It has a customer parameter, which is, it's a little bit small, but it says IEnumerable of customer. That's exactly the signature of my getCustomers method. The other one is the exception that might be set if something went wrong. And then this is the body of the class, of the method, sorry. If the error is not null, I'm going to show it, or else I'm going to create a new observable collection using the IEnumerable as a parameter. This constructor is a new addition in Silverlight 4. You cannot do that in Silverlight 3. In Silverlight 3, you have to iterate through your IEnumerable and add the customers to the observable collection. Now, in Silverlight 4, you can do that. Okay, so now I'm going to do a little bit of XAML. First thing I will do is add a data template, which is going to represent my customer. So for each customer, this XAML is going to be applied. And you see, I had to type the XAML manually. I didn't have any blendability there. So I have to know that my customer object, which is actually generated by the service, okay, when I connect to the service, has a first name property and a last name property. It has a whole bunch of properties, but I need to read the documentation. That's a bit annoying. Also, the styling, I had to do everything by hand. So it's not, you know, not very funny. Anyway, my data template is available, so now I'm going to use it into a list box. Now, this list box is blue, like this we see something. And I set the item source to the customer's dependency property that I have inside my main page. I'm using an element name binding to do that. And I'm using the customer template that we just saw. So now I'm able to build. And I can run this. We have the blue list box. Have to wait a little bit because the data has come through the Atlantic. And here we go. I have my list of customers. So that's nice. But now what happens if I try to edit that into Expression Blend? Well, into Expression Blend, I have my blue list box, but that's all. Okay? The code is actually never executed. So that's one disadvantage of doing code behind into a Silverlight application. This code that creates the service and connects is never executed by Expression Blend. Okay? So let's transform that into something that Blend can use. First thing I will do is remove those properties. So I remove the dependency property, and I remove the initialization of the service. Then into my solution, I'm going to add a layer. So I'm adding a new folder, and I'm calling that view model. Then I'm going to add a class, which I call main view model. Now there is always, well, not always, but there is often a correspondence, a one-to-one correspondence between a view and the view model. So main page, main view model, settings page, settings view model. Okay? It's kind of a convention. Just makes code easier to understand for people who have to maintain your code in 5 years. If you don't want them to curse you, you know, it's good to have conventions. So main view model is here, and I'm going to just delete that and add from a snippet. Here we go. So the implementation of this view model is actually implementing an interface which is very important in Silverlight and WPF called iNotifyPropertyChanged. This interface has exactly one member, the property changed event. And your responsibility is to raise the event when the property changes and you want the bindings to be notified. Before, when I had the things in my view, I was using a dependency property to do exactly the same. Now this is lighter, okay? This is easier to test and easier to maintain. Dependency properties are fantastic for UI, for controls, but I prefer to use something lighter for my objects. This is a lightweight version of my dependency property, if you like. Then I'm going to add a property. This is the same property as before. It's named customers. It is, like before, an observable collection of this customer proxy, which is generated for me. And when it changes, so when a new collection is created, I'm going to raise the property change event. And then the bindings will do the rest. They are going to update the view. Now I still need to call my service, so let's do that in the constructor of the view model. Again, this is probably not what you want to do. Probably you want to react to a button push, okay, but that's one way to do it. I am constructing my data service, which is this high-level class we saw before, and the rest is exactly the same. Now I can build that. And now I need to do a few changes in the XAML. I did an object which is completely separated from the XAML. So I need to bring both together, bring the main page and the main view model together. So to do that, what I'm going to show you now is not best practice, but it's probably the easiest way that works well in Blend. And then later I'm going to explain to you why it's not best practice, and then even later we are going to see what is actually a better practice. First thing I'm doing is declaring a new XMLNS, a new XML namespace, which is mapping a prefix. I could write anything I want here, VM for view model, equals, and then I get IntelliSense, and I can say, let's take the view model namespace. Okay? So now I'm able to use those objects from this CLR namespace into my XAML. Then I'm going to add a resource, which is my main view model. It's the only class in this namespace, and give it a key. Oops, here we go. Now I have, when the parser reaches this line, it's going to actually create a new instance of the main view model class and store it in your resources, ready to be used. All right? And then what I'm going to do is bind the data context of the grid, which is a property that every, I believe, UI element has. Data context equals, and I'm going to do a binding to the static resource, which is waiting for me, which is called main view model. So now from this moment, everything I do in the grid, if I don't specify it explicitly, if I don't specify something different explicitly, is going to happen in reference to the view model. So I can remove the element name here, and instead I'm going to bind to the customer's property. Notice I don't have a source, so it's going to use the implicit data context, which is inherited from the grid, okay, to the customer's property that I created before. Now, why is that not really best practice? Well, mostly for two reasons. The first thing is that you don't have control over the creation time of this main view model. It will be created when the parser reaches that line, which can be, you know, it's not very deterministic, okay? Very often, you want to have your view models already created and set up when you start the application, before the views are even created. I mean, that's one possible scenario. Here, it's not possible. The other thing is that you cannot pass any parameter to the constructor of the view model because XAML doesn't allow that. The XAML parser always calls the default constructor. Okay? In WPF, there is a workaround which is not very clean. In the new XAML 4, which is not used here, there is also a workaround. Here, we don't have that. So you cannot pass, you cannot inject any service into your view model. So we will see later how we can do that cleaner. For now, it's good. Going to build this. Now I can run that. And if everything goes well, I will have exactly the same result as before. Okay, let me just make sure, because I want to really prove that it works. Here we go. And now connection. Okay. So now I have an MVVM application. So it should work in Blend, right? Unfortunately, it's not that easy, really. So let's go back into Blend. I'm going to reload. And, I have an exception. Okay. So I know that my code is running because this message box here is actually shown by me. Remember, if the error is not null, I'm going to show it. So that works. But I don't know any designer able to work against that screen. Okay? God knows that I can't. So instead, what we need to do is find out where does it crash. Now I'm going to show you a trick which actually I was surprised not many people know, but so don't be afraid if you don't know, it's normal apparently. If you place a breakpoint here and you go to debug, attached to process, Blend is a WPF app. It's running your code. And it's your code, you know, you own it, so you can really go and inspect it. I'm going to attach the debugger to Blend. Here we go. And then, what I'm going to do is just close that page and reopen it. And here we go, I'm inside my code. So now I can debug my view model. Okay, Blend is running your code. That's pretty cool. So, what I can do now is step. Okay, service creation was fine, no problem. Well, it should be because I don't do anything special. Now, the problem occurs when I really call the customer. Here we go, we have the error. So now I know what part of the code I need to isolate. So let's do that now. What I'm going to do is add a check in my view model here, which is using a built-in class in Silverlight called Designer Properties. And this property is in DesignTool returns true when the code is running into Blend or into Visual Studio Designer. In this case, I'm creating a new observable collection of customer. I am using actually the WCF proxy that has been generated for me. So I'm using exactly the same object, but I'm generating dummy customers. Now in the other case, in the case where I do have actually my code running, I'm going to connect to the WCF service. Now I can build this, change back into Expression Blend, and here we go. I see some design time data now. So now it's very convenient for my designers or for the integrator because I can go ahead, I can say edit additional template, generated items, edit current. I can take those two guys here and, for example, choose another font like this one and then say, okay, this guy here has to be bigger, so let's do it 36, okay? Now I can run the code. This is generated data. If I run my code now, I have a real set of data coming up, but with the same template. All right. So this is MVVM. Now there are other ways to generate design time data. You can actually go to the data tab and then create here sample data. This is what I showed yesterday. You can also import sample data from XML. You can even create sample data from a class. That's a new addition in Blend 4. And the way that I showed you is basically using your existing objects to generate sample data. So again, there are multiple implementations of this pattern. Okay, so what did we see now? What we saw now is a view model and a model and data bindings. And this is the MVVM pattern. Everything else is additions to the MVVM pattern, helpers, practices, whatever, tools, okay? The MVVM pattern is just that, so it's not that complicated, really. Now, one helper which is very convenient is commands. Commands allow you, from your view, without any code behind, without even handler, to call your view model. We'll see more about that in a moment. Another helper which is cool, which I personally like, is sending messages, for example, from your view model to your view. The view model doesn't have any knowledge of the view. It's just an object which is here. Okay? It doesn't know the view. So if you want to send something to your view, there are multiple ways to do that. You could do an event. It sometimes works. In some situation, you prefer something which is more decoupled, like messages. I will show samples of messaging in just a moment. Another situation where messaging is super useful is that you never have just one view and one view model in your code. Usually, you have multiple views and multiple associated view models. And the view models don't really know each other. Often, they don't. Sometimes, you have a hierarchy of view models, but often, they just don't know each other. So instead, what you can do is send messages, and even in some cases, get a callback from a view model. Okay? So let's talk about commands. Commands are a way to expose a method in the form of a property. So it's like a point of entry for a method. It can be data-bound because it's a property. It is an implementation of the iCommand interface, which is inside the Silverlight and WPF framework, inside the .NET framework. This interface has three methods. First one is called execute, and it is called when the method is, when the command is invoked. That can happen, for example, when the button is clicked. Okay? This method will be executed. Then the canExecute method is called periodically by the UI to check if the command can be executed, if it is enabled or not. If you use canExecute command on controls, normally the control will be disabled or enabled, depending on that, on the state of this method. It's returning true or false. And then the canExecute changed event handler. This is an event, not an event handler. You have to give it an event handler. Anyway, the canExecute change event is raised or should be raised when the context of the command changes, and then the value of canExecute might be different than it was before. Okay? Now, in WPF, you most often don't need to raise canExecute change because you have a guy called the command manager which is doing that for you. That's cool. Silverlight, you don't have such thing. So you need to raise the canExecute change event manually. Okay, it's not such a big deal, but you need to think about it. So let's see a quick demo of commands and relay command. Okay, so here I have some XAML code. And you see I have a button which is bound. The command property is bound to a property called sayHelloCommand, which is on the main view model. Notice that I don't have any click event here. I also have a command parameter, so I'm able to pass exactly one parameter to my execute method. And in that case, I use the binding, an element name binding, to the text property of a text box. So I expect a string on the command. Then on my view model, I declared a property called sayHelloCommand, and it's of type sayHello. And here I'm creating it. Now this sayHelloCommand, it's actually a class of its own. It is the implementation of iCommand that I was mentioning before. So it's quite, you know, it's not very satisfactory, because for such a small, you know, functionality, you need to implement a whole class. You have to give a reference to the main view model, so you have cross-reference. The reason why I need a reference to my view model is because I'm going to observe the property change event of the view model, and if the property that change is called counter, I'm going to tell my UI, you need to check the canExecute method, because every time that counter changes, you know, my state might change. Now, the canExecute method is checking the owner, which is the main view model. It's checking the counter property. And if this property can be divided by 2, it's going to say, I can be executed. If not, I cannot be executed. That's a stupid demo, but still it illustrates the point. And then the method, when it's invoked, is going to just show a message box. So let's run this. Here we go. I can enter a name. I can say hello. All right. And if I disable, if I increment the counter, now it's odd. It's one, okay? Then I return false into my canExecute method, and this is going to automatically disable the button. So, and I can re-enable it, by the way, and say hello again. So that's really cool, but it's really, you know, too much code. And, you know, as I said at Mix 2 weeks ago, code is what breaks your application, so you want to minimize it. This is where you have bugs. You know, it's a code that you write. So instead, what we are going to do is use an object which is going to minimize the amount of code that you have to write. So here, I have the exact same XAML code. I am binding to say hello command, and I am passing the content of the text box. Now what changes is that I don't have the say hello class anymore. It's gone. One less class to maintain. Instead, I am using an object, and you know there are multiple implementations of that. The one I'm showing here is included in the toolkit that I'm maintaining, that I'm going to present a little bit more later. It's called relay command. What it's going to do is relay the execute call, the call to execute and can execute, to a method of your own. Now it is expecting a parameter in that case, which is the content of the text box. It's a string. Okay? If you don't have a parameter, there is also a non-generic version, relay command without generic, which you can use. If you have a parameter, you can give the parameter here, it will be casted for you. And then I need to create my relay command. So the constructor takes one compulsory parameter and one optional parameter. The compulsory one is expressed here as a lambda expression. The parameter is the content of the command parameter property. And then I'm going to take that and show a message box. So I'm doing the same code than before. The second parameter, which is optional, this is the delegate for the canExecute method. So this one is actually returning true or false. Now, expressed in lambda expressions, it's a little bit weird because you don't see the keyword return. The reason is that you can actually ignore the return keyword when it's just one line of code like that. It makes for a shorter syntax. So what this code is doing is actually taking a parameter, which is, again, the content of the text box. I'm not using it. I'm just ignoring it. I check the counter attribute, and if it can be divided by 2, I return true. That's what the syntax means. If it cannot be divided by 2, then I return false. So I don't have my say hello class anymore. I have really 3 lines of code to create the command. And I can access my counter attribute, which is actually a private attribute inside my code. Okay, I don't have the annoying reference to the main view models that I had before. One more thing I need to do, remember that I need to raise a canExecute change event because I'm in Silverlight. I don't have the command manager. So I can do that here. And I'm going to raise a canExecute change event, which is a method on the relay command. So now if I run that, well, you know, without surprise, it works exactly the same as before. I'm just going to click here to go faster. Hello. And then I can enable or disable. So this is the relay command. So there are 2 constructors. First constructor is, well, the first class, rather, it's a non-generic class that you can use when you don't have a command parameter. Then the other one takes a generic parameter, and you can use it when you have a command parameter so that you have automatic casting. Now, commands are really cool, but they have one big disadvantage in Silverlight and WPF is that you can use them only on certain controls, namely button base, so that's button, toggle button, checkbox, you know, radio button, etc., and also the menu item. So there you can buy the command. For all other controls and for all other events than the click event, you cannot use commands out of the box, but I'm going to show you later a way to do that anyway. Now let's talk about messaging. So messaging is you know, the action of sending messages to objects which don't know each other. It should be super simple, because or else you're not going to want to use it. So by default, it should be simple, but it should also be possible to open filtered channels. So if you want to send a message, for example, only to a certain type, like from the main view model, I want to send a message to all the instances of a pop-up window. Okay, I can do that. Also, you should be able to specify a token, which is basically a way to say, I'm going to send a message to the guy who registered with the same token. If the guy registered with 1234, he's going to get the message. If he registered with 2345, he's not going to get the message. So it's a way, it's basically a contract between the objects who don't know each other. Okay? Those things are just to make, basically to send less messages and basically to reduce the amount of code you need when you receive a message. They are optional. Also, you should be able to create multiple messenger instances if you want to. You shouldn't have to, but if you want to, you should be able to. So no constraints at all. I think that if you need to implement an interface to receive a message, you're probably doing it wrong. It's too complicated. Again, remember, code is what breaks your application, so you want to minimize it. So let's see a small demo of the messenger. So there are, again, multiple implementations of messaging. In Prism, it's called Event Aggregator. It's a little bit more complex than the one I'm showing you here. The one I'm showing you here comes also into the toolkit that I'm maintaining. So first of all, let's run the application to understand what it does. It's a WPF app now, but you have the same class in SilverLight as well. So I'm going to open a second window. And by the way, this is not an MVVM application at all. Okay? Those components have nothing to do with MVVM. They just help you when you do an MVVM app. But you can also use them in other scenarios. Now notice that this guy here is saying empty, but if I send a message, it's now saying hello. So I send a message from one window to the other. Now I can also send messages with callbacks. That can be very useful in certain scenarios. Like for example, I say, how are you? And then I'm sending the callback, and the callback was received by the first window. So the first window sends a message, waits for a while, which is great for asynchronous operations, such as connecting to a WCF service. And then when you come back, you call the callback. So now let's understand how this works. So the second window is a recipient. This is a totally normal window. It doesn't implement any interface or whatever. It's going to register for two types of messages. The first one, the message type is a string. You can register for any object, simple values, integer, booleans, whatever, or complex objects, for example, the selected customer in a data grid. Okay? When I get this parameter of type string, in this case, I'm going to set the text property of a text box to that message. Super simple. Then for the callback scenario, it's a little bit more complicated, but not much. It's using a built-in message type, which is built in the toolkit that I'm maintaining, the MVVM Lite toolkit, called notification message action. What it's doing, now the parameter is of type notification message action. So I'm going to set, again, the text property of the text box, to the notification property, which is of type string on this message. And then I'm going to store the message for later. Now something happens. I'm actually enabling the callback button. The sender is waiting patiently on the callback. And then when I click on the button, I'm going to execute this message, which is basically just, you know, calling the sender back. Now let's understand what happens on the sender. The sender, again, is a totally normal window, no interface whatsoever. To send a string message, that's what you do. You call messenger.default.send, and then you give an object. The object can be anything you want. Okay? Now, the guy who receives the message needs to register for that type of message. Now, if you want to send a message with a callback, again, I'm using the same class that is built in the messenger into the MVVM Lite toolkit, notification message action. I say the callback parameter is going to be a string. The notification is always a string, so it's, in this case, hello, call me back. And I'm giving a delegate which will be executed when the callback arrives. I could have done a lambda expression here again, but I didn't want to do too many lambdas. Send message callback is here, and it's taking the string parameter, which is a type that I specified here. Okay? So it's pretty simple. In fact, it's so simple that it's easy to overuse the messenger. Okay? There are scenarios where it's so decoupled that you kind of lose the overview of what you're doing. That's the, you know, the downside of decoupling is that it's hard to know, to understand exactly what happens. So use it wisely. It's a powerful tool. But as every tool, you know, you don't use a drill to sew a clothes, okay? So use it wisely. So messenger, that's the registration. And this is a sending. Everything else is not needed. So those components are into something that I maintain, which is called the MVVM Lite Toolkit. So the idea of the MVVM Lite Toolkit is to break the monotony, is to reduce the amount of boilerplate code that you have to write when you implement the MVVM pattern. That's the Get Started page where you have documentation and, you know, where you can download the bits. This is a CodePlex site where you can check the source code, and also if you want to discuss features, I appreciate if we do it on that page. Main reason is that the whole community can see that, so it's quite nice. The version 3 was released at Mix 2 weeks ago, and I'm actually about to release a service pack to that, which is supporting the Windows Phone. So I'm going to show you an example of that. And this is a big announcement for the Tech Days, Belgium. You. The idea is to keep it small and simple. Okay, Here we go. I'm very conservative when I add new features. I'm actually very slow in adding them. So if you require a feature, if you send me a request for a feature, very often my answer is, yeah, it's a good idea, but I will wait a while because I want to make sure that it's actually really not growing too much. I don't want to do another prism, okay? Now, it works in WPF and in Silverlight exactly the same, with the same code, almost. In Silverlight 3, there are some small differences because Silverlight 3 has stuff missing, okay? Now, it also works in the phone. That's really cool because the phone is Silverlight 3. There are two libraries in the toolkit, one that I call the essentials, which is basically what you really need, and the extras, which is nice to have, but you don't really need it. The essentials are really Relay Command that we saw, Messenger that we saw, and ViewModelBase, which is a utility class. You can derive your ViewModels from that, and then you have to write less code. Basically, it has a raise property change method that we saw, and a few other utility properties. The extras, one thing which is pretty cool is the event to command. Now, that's a blend behavior. So I made a second DLL for that because you need to add an additional DLL if you want to use that, which is called system.windows.interactivity.dll. That's a Microsoft DLL, but it's not part of the framework. So this is why if you don't want to use it, if you don't want to add this DLL to your application, you're free to do so. But if you want the extra feature of the event to command, it's cool. What it does is it binds any event of any object, UI element, to a command. Okay, we'll see a sample of that. Dispatcher Helper is actually a class that I started recently. I'm going to expand it a bit. It's helping you when you do multi-threaded applications in Silverlight and WPF. You also have, the reason why I call that a toolkit and not a framework, is that you have tools. You have project templates available for VS 2008, 2010, Expression Blend 3, Expression Blend 4. And they're also available for Silverlight 3, Silverlight 4, WPF 3.5, WPF 4. So you can use the same code all over your apps, okay? And also for the phone. Did I mention the phone? I think I did, right? I'm very excited about the phone. Also item templates, create new view, etc. And one thing which is really cool is code snippets because, you know, writing a property changed, writing the implementation of iNotify property change, you saw it's quite a lot of code. So instead of writing the code by hand, you can use snippets, expand them, and then you will get that automatically. So let's see a demo which is a little bit more, you know, solid than what we saw before. All right. So this application is pretty much the same than what I had before, in that I have a service reference to my WCF service. I still have my data service with the getCustomer method. What changed is that I now have also a method called saveCustomer, so I can also save things back to the WCF service. Also, it is implementing an interface now called iDataService. iDataService is here with those two methods. The advantage of having an interface here is that I can specify multiple implementations of this service. For example, I have a design time design data service. Now, this design data service is what Blend is going to use, so it's creating 100 new customers. Also, my main view model is a little bit different. I still have my customers class, but now I also have a property called isBusy. This property is going to be true when an asynchronous operation is running. Now, that's something that you can test with unit tests. It has two commands, saveCustomer and refresh. And then I'm also injecting my service. Instead of creating new data service like I did before, I'm injecting it now, so the view model doesn't know where it comes from. It doesn't have to know. Then, another difference is that instead of working with a customer proxy directly, I can do that in WCF because the customer proxy is implementing the iNotify property change property, so I can actually data bind directly to that. That's convenient. But since it's a generated class, you cannot add anything to it. And sometimes you want. For example, here I'm going to add a property called isDirty. And this property is going to be set to true whenever anything changes into the model, and I didn't save that to the service yet. So here, I'm subscribing to the property change event of the model, and I just say every time that anything changes, I'm setting isDirty to true. Now, also remember, last time I showed you a way to bind, which was not really best practice. Okay, I had created a view model directly in my resources. Now, here I'm working with something that I personally like a lot, which is called view model locator. View model locator is like an intermediary object. It's a global object in your application. I'm going to show you how to create it later. And then it's taking care of creating, deleting, and basically monitoring your view models. What I'm going to do here is use an additional library, which is called Unity. That's an inversion of control container. This is made by Microsoft, by the Patents and Practices Group. It's available for WPF and Silverlight. It's not a must to use it, but a lot of applications nowadays use any type of IOC container, of inversion of control container. So it's just making your life easier if you have one. If you don't have one, no problem, you can just go ahead and create the objects by yourself. I'm going to show you how to do that actually a little bit later. So now what I'm doing, whenever the static constructor is called, I'm going to create a container. And then if I am in design mode, if I'm running into Blend, I'm going to register the design data service class whenever the iDataService interface is used in my code. And Unity is taking care of the rest. When it's not the case, if it's really running, I'm going to use data service, which is the actual implementation. Then I'm also going to register the type main view model, and I'm going to give it a container control lifetime manager, which is a really complicated way of saying I have only one in my application. Now, the reason why I have only one in that sample is that I have only one main page, okay? Now, if you have multiple views, like, for example, pop-ups in WPF, multiple windows, multiple instances of the same view, you obviously need multiple instances of the same view model, all right? So what you do is that you just remove this, and you're going to return a new main view model every time that this is called. So now I have set up my view model locator. Still need to provide access to the view model. And here, notice that I'm using a non-static property. Okay, the reason is that I cannot do in Silverlight data binding against static properties. So just to be consistent in Silverlight and in WPF, I'm using non-static properties everywhere. Okay? Just a small parenthesis. We are, I don't know if people like follow me on Twitter or follow people like Glenn Block or Nikhil Kothari, who are kind of, you know, big Microsoft names in this field. We are talking a lot about the view model locators these days. Don't let that confuse you. We talk a lot all the time. So basically, you know, and then suddenly there is one spark of genius and we implement something which is cool. Now, the view model locator is not very satisfying right now because you need this property. And it's personally the part of my toolkit that I'm the least happy about. And we're already talking about new ways to do that in a totally generic manner. Okay? That might come in version 4 if everything goes well, if we find this spark of genius that we're looking for now. All right? End of the parenthesis. So here inside this property, I'm simply going to resolve the main view model, and the rest is taken care of by Unity. Okay, so now I can build my app. I can go into Blend, and here I prepared a small UI. Here we go, and my objects and timeline, voila. So into this small UI, I have a cache which is going to be shown whenever an asynchronous operation is running. Right now, I'm going to remove it, to move it out of the way. Now, I need to bind my view model to my view. Before I did that in XAML, when you create a new MVVM Lite application out of the box, for example, in Blend, you have here Silverlight, Silverlight 4. For WPF, they are here. And for the phone, then you don't need to do that, what I'm going to do now, because it's already pre-wired. Okay? I'm going to do it here, first of all, because I want to show you, because I think it's so cool that it works in Blend. Second of all, because you might be led to convert an existing application to MVVM Lite later. So this is how you want to do it. First of all, I'm going to create an instance of the view model locator. And I said I want this guy to be global. So I'm going to create it inside the project. I'm adding a new object data source. I'm going to call that locator. And I'm going to select the class ViewModelLocator that I implemented just before your eyes before. And then I'm going to take the main property of the ViewModelLocator and drag it on my user control. Now this is automatically binding the data context to that. And here we go, I'm set. Okay? From this moment on, everything that happens in the user control happens on the main ViewModel, except if I specify otherwise. So now what I can do is take this button. Let's go and select the command property. And I'm going to create a data binding. And notice Blend knows that I'm using, that I have a data context which is set. And this is a main view model. So I can select the refresh command property. This particular command doesn't need a parameter. So I can just say OK. Then I'm going to select my list box. And I'm going to edit a template. I prepared the template already to go a little bit faster. But it's not bound to anything. Now, one thing which is really cool in Expression Blend 4 is that you have a new panel which shows you at all times the data context of your element. In this case, I'm inside the customer template. The data context of a template is set to the customer view model object. But you see, this is cool because I can expand it. I have a model property of type customer, which is my WCF proxy. I can expand it. These are all the properties that are available on the WCF service. And then I can take the first name and say, let's bind it to my text block. And you see I have data because I'm using the design time data service now. So I have actually 100 customers created for me. Then I'm going to take the last name. You can also drop it on the UI directly. And here we go. So at this point, I can run my app. Aha, the cache, I forgot to take care of it. Okay, I'm going to do that right now. But anyway, I see in the background, the objects are actually loaded, so that's fine. Now let's take care of that cache. Okay, I'm going to tell you a secret. I didn't really forget. That was for the dramatic effect. Yeah, anyway. So now I'm going to show it, all right? And to take care of that cache, that's really a designer matter. What the UI, what the view model does is just saying, I'm busy. Is busy property set to true. That's all it does. Okay? So now what I want to do inside here, I'm going to create states. I'm going to say that's a busy state. And I will have one state called normal. and another state called busy. Now, when I'm busy, that's the UI I want to see. Or it could be anything else, okay? When I'm in normal state, however, I want the cache to be transparent. Oops, I'm wrong. I want the cache to be transparent. And I also want it to be collapsed. Because if it's transparent but still there, it's going to block my mouse. And I want to be able to select the text box. Okay? So I'm setting the opacity to zero, and I'm also removing it of the way. Now I can do also a transition. So I'm going to say I want it to go into 0.3 seconds, 300 milliseconds. Now you can visualize that in Blend. You can turn on the transition preview, and then you can go from one state to the other. That's much smoother than when you choose zero. Okay, that's not a very nice experience. Now, you know, those are the small things that make for great applications, okay? All right, so now I have my two states, but how do I switch from one to the other? Well, I'm going to use a blend behavior, which is basically just a way to encapsulate code so that you have to write less code behind. And this one is built in Blend. It's called data state behavior, and it allows you to switch between two states based on a binding. So I'm going to bind this to the isBusy property, which is a Boolean, can be true or false. And I'm going to say when this property is true, which is a true state, I want you to go into the busy state. When the property is false, I want you to go into the normal state. Now the last thing I want to take care of is the command. I want to save my customer to the service from time to time. I have a save customer command on the view model. But remember, I told you command can be used only on button base and only for the click event. And this is not a good experience, okay? If the user has to click on a button every time he wants to save, you know, you could do that better. So what we are going to do is go into the list box. I'm just going to stop the state recording to avoid bad surprises. I'm going to go into the list box, into the template again. You know what? Let me remove this guy again. Here we go. And then I'm going to take a behavior which is a part of the MVVM Lite toolkit. It's called event to command. I'm going to drag it on my text box. And now I'm going to say, I want you to use the lost focus event of the text box. So every time the user tabs out or, you know, clicks with the mouse outside of the text box, I'm going to save. Might not be the best way, but it's one way to do it. And then I want you to go through a binding. Now I have one small problem. It's that my data context is set to the customer view model because I'm inside the data template. Okay? And my command is specified on the main view model. So I need to switch context. That's okay, I can do that because I have my global view model locator, which has a property of type main view model. So I can select the save customer command on that guy. I'm doing an indirection if you want. Okay? And now I need a parameter, which I'm going to set to the current instance of the customer. I'm just going to pass the current instance of the customer directly to the command. So that's an empty binding. All right, so now I can run my code. So I have my cache. The cache disappears because now I'm in normal state. I'm just going to show you the XML file that I'm loading, and that's actually from the web, okay? Now my last name is set to Bunion, which is here, but if I go and say hello, I tab out, I have a small asynchronous operation going on, and then if I refresh, I see that the file has been saved on the other end of the Atlantic Ocean. So that works, okay? All right, so let's talk about the problems that you have when you do MVVM, okay? That's my favorite part. So first of all, you need to write too much code, let's face it. iNotify property change, the implementation is much too verbose. Okay? Now the good news is that people like me talk to people at Microsoft. People at Microsoft are very aware of that because basically we keep bugging them. And they are going to change that, most probably. Okay? I don't know when, I don't know how, but it's going to be better. So for the moment, you can use the snippets. Also, commands are actually something which is not really needed. You should be able to bind directly an event to a method. Now, you have some behaviors who allow you to do that. But in fact, it should be really built into the framework. You should be able to say, click equals do something. All right? Also, certain operations are tricky. For example, setting the focus on an element. This is something which is hard because the view model doesn't know the view. So you can send messages, you can do tricks around that, but it's not very easy. And I think my mouse is slowly dying. Okay. Since you are using data binding a lot, you can only do that in a framework which supports data binding. Okay, so ASP.NET, you can do MVVM in ASP.NET, but it's not very easy. Also, the message to the community is not very clear. Okay, I hope that this helps changing that. I'm actually giving the talk a few times. It's also available in video. I try to really spread the message. A lot of people are helping me in that. But still, there is a lot of confusion around MVVM. Let's talk about the myths now. One big myth that we hear a lot is if you use MVVM, you don't have code in the code behind, or you shouldn't have. Okay? And sometimes you even hear, if you put code in the view's code behind, the MVVM police will take your family away. All right? Now that's bollocks, okay? You can put code in your code behind, and in fact you should. It's called the code behind for a reason, okay? In certain circumstances. Sometimes it helps. So why make your life more difficult? Converters, the same. Sometimes they help, binding converters. You will have much less code and much less converters, but sometimes, you know, it just makes life easier. All right? Now, just remember, however, that code in the code behind is more difficult to test. So that's the downside. Also, MVVM is only suitable for big projects. Well, no. Very often I start a new app, and then half an hour later I refactor it to an MVVM application because it's too painful to do otherwise. You can use MVVM all over the place if you are so inclined. You don't have to. That's the good news. Performance, that was a question that was asked from me a lot of time. At Identity Mind, we use MVVM a lot, and to be honest, we never really noticed a big hit on performance. Now, you have a hit on performance because, you know, WPF and Silverlight is managed, is, you know, it's going to be slower than an MFC application for sure. But MVVM itself doesn't really add a lot of perf hit. The data binding framework that you use a lot is actually pretty optimized. MVVM is complex and makes my head hurt. I hope that we saw that it's not that complex. That's something I hear a lot. Yeah, but you know, I don't need separation, I don't need blend, I don't have a designer. Well, you know, you always need to maintain your app, or maybe somebody else has to do it in 5 years, okay? Separation is good for multiple reasons. You can replace a component by something else. Cannot use MVVM with other patterns. In fact, you can, absolutely. If you have an application, a WPF app, which is running with MVC or whatever, MVP, you can absolutely do a user control, slap a view model on that, and then you have a small part of your app which is, you know, a little bit more blendable than the rest of the app. That works fine. And finally, that's really not true, believe me. All right, so now I promised you another demo. I still have 8 minutes, so I'm going to do that fast. But anyway, I want to show you that you can do all that on the phone as well. And this is exclusive from Belgium, because I have 15 more minutes than I had at Mix. So what I'm going to do here is add a new project inside the same solution. And I'm going to choose an MVVM Lite for the Windows Phone 7. Okay? This is not really available yet. I have a preview in the current version of the toolkit. I'm going to release that very soon, an optimized version. I'm going to say OK. And this is a pre-wired app with the main view model, with the main view model locator, the view, everything we just saw. I'm going to set that as start project. And one thing I want to do is change the default namespace for this app, because I'm going to reuse a lot of code from my main application. So I'm going to set here the default namespace to exactly the same than the other one. Okay. Then the next step would be to add a service reference to the WCF service. But unfortunately, there is a bug right now in Visual Studio 10. You cannot do that here. So what I'm going to do is a small trick. It's just temporary until they fix it. I'm going to open the same project into the Express version, which is automatically installed when you install the tools for the phone, okay? And then inside the Express version, I can go ahead and add a service reference. So I'm going to go and load, that's the same address of my service, my WCF service, which is on my website. Now it's loading the whole information for the WCF service. Here we go. And I'm going to name that guy exactly the same, than on the desktop. Now it's creating the customer proxy that we saw a few times. Saving that, and now I can close it. I don't really need that. Okay, I'm just going to save the solution. It doesn't matter. Here we go. So you can do all your development into a Visual Studio Express. It works. Okay, here I prefer, personally, I have Ultimate here, so it, you know, it's a little bit nicer. So now I have my service reference set up. Now what I'm going to do is reuse code that I already wrote. Okay, it's sitting there, it's Silverlight, so why not reuse it? So I'm going to take the model, add existing item, I will go into my other project and select customer view model and main view model. And instead of clicking on add, I'm clicking on add as a link. So I have only one instance of each file, one physical instance, and I'm using it twice. I also want to remove the main view model. Instead, I'm going to add existing item, and I go to my... Oh, what did I do? Okay, sorry for that. Let's remove this. Actually, in the model, I want, of course, to add the model. That was wrong. Let's go here, model, data service, iData service. That's better. Here we go. Then inside the view model this time, sorry for that, existing item. Now I go to my view model folder. I take customer view model, main view model, add as a link. And what I also want to add is a design time because I want to do stuff in Blend. Design, add existing item, design, poof, poof. Poof. All right. Now the view model locator, you know, maybe it's just me who is stupid. It's very possible. I don't want to exclude that possibility. But I was not able to use the Unity container inside the phone yet. So I don't know it. I didn't get it to work. So instead, what I'm going to do is use, you know, I told you before, you don't have to use Unity. And I'm going to actually show that to you, that it's true. Let's take a custom implementation of the view model locator. It's doing pretty much the same. It's going to create a new iData service depending on the design mode or the runtime mode. And it's going to construct the main view model, injecting the service into the main view model's constructor directly. So now my stuff is ready. I can build that. And I still have one small problem. Now, the phone is Silverlight 3, and you remember I told you this constructor is Silverlight 4, okay? You cannot use that in the phone. So two ways to solve that. Either you can fall back to Silverlight 3, because that's still supported in Silverlight 4, but it's a bit annoying, okay? This is a very optimized way to create a new observable collection. So instead, what I'm going to do is go here in the project properties, and I'm just going to add something which says I'm now running on the phone. And here inside my view model, I'm going to say if phone, else, and if. So if I'm not on the phone, I'm going to construct with the Silverlight 4 way. If I am on the phone, I'm going to use the old Silverlight 3 way, which is to iterate through the iEnumerable and to add a customer every time. Now I should be ready to go. Okay, I have an error somewhere. What did I do? Oh, yeah. Okay, I see what I did. I pasted at the wrong side. And here we go. All right. Now let's change into Expression Blend. Project change, yes. just reloading. All right. Let's take that out of the way. And now I can open my main page.xaml. Here we go. I'm going to change the value of those text blocks because they are actually bound to the main view model, but the main view model changed. So instead, I'm simply going to reset the value. Reset and say tech days. Here we go. Now this guy here, I'm going to reset and set to the customers at the name of the list. Okay, I have multiple customers. And now I'm going to add a list box to my UI. So I go ahead, select a list box. So. Here we go. And now I can go ahead and data bind. You see I have the same situation as before. The data context is set. So I can set that to the customer. And I have my design time data running on the phone. Well, in Blend. Okay. So now I can create a new template. Just going to switch that into a stack panel. Make it horizontal, and I'm going to use something a little bit more visual on the phone. Here we go, image. Voilà. I'm going to add a text block. Here we go, I'm going to put a little bit that, a little bit that, make it bigger because on the phone everything is should be bigger. Okay, it's a multi-touch thing. Now I can do some binding. So if I go into data here, I can take the picture URI, which is available on my service, data bind it. And here I'm using, by the way, design time data. And then for the text block, I'm going to just use the first name. Oops, here we go. So now I have design time data here. If I run that in the emulator, oops, I forgot to set the startup project. Now I want to start the phone project, obviously. Run that. And now it's going to go on the emulator. If I had a device, hint, hint, I could run on the phone, but I don't have a device. Hint, hint. If anybody have one, call me. And my real-time data is loaded on the phone. The pictures are loaded asynchronously, so it takes a little bit longer, but they are going to appear, or they should appear, in just a moment. Well, they don't appear. Anyway. And here they are. Voila. Okay. So, thank you very much. It's very nice to have talked to you today. If you want more information, my blog. Okay, I will post all the sample code. Most of it is on already, but I will do the Windows Phone bits as well. Get started page for the MVVM Lite Toolkit. El Bunion is my name on Twitter. Let's continue the conversation, and if you have questions, please ask them on Twitter, because my time is up now. Thank you very much.